It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. Department of Defense has started surveying a military installation in the state of Kansas, potentially to hold detainees. Currently at the U.S. detention facility in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, under current American laws, the military and the Department of Justice are not allowed to send the detainees in Cuba anywhere in the U.S. Congress must vote to change the law. President Obama has called the closure of the Guantanamo facilities since the beginning of his presidency. New Gallup survey indicates that only 1 in 3 Americans approves of President Obama's handling of the international agreement to restrain Iran's nuclear program. U.S. Congress is now in summer recess, but plans to vote next month on whether to approve or reject the accord that would bar Iran from building a nuclear weapon in exchange for lifting sanctions that have hobbled Tehran's economy. The Greek government defended its new bailout program before the country's parliament ahead of a vote expected today on a bill to approve a $93 billion bailout package from the European Union. Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras urged the parliament to approve the deal agreed on this week with international creditors. Greece needs the money by August 20th when it must repay about $3.5 billion in debt to the European Central Bank. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has ordered the military to defeat the Boko Haram insurgency within 3 months. Mr. Buhari spoke as he swore in 4 new military chiefs. He had replaced the heads of the Army, Navy, Air Force, and his chief of defense soon after taking office on May the 29th in an effort to re-energize the fight against Boko Haram. This is VOA News. U.S. and Cuban officials gathering in Havana today to watch Marines there hoist the American flag above the U.S. Embassy. VOA's Pam Dawkins has the story.
As onlookers watched, Cuba raised its flag at the newly reestablished embassy in Washington in July. Now it's the U.S. turn to host a ceremony, although the U.S. embassy in Havana actually opened in July as well. The newly expanded engagement between the two countries may result in only minor changes for the average Cuban because the U.S. trade embargo remains in effect. But as the Cuban government continues its clampdown on dissidents, some say the U.S. should have held back on efforts to normalize ties until Cuba showed a greater human rights commitment. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
Close Pakistani military court sentenced 6 men to death after convicting them for involvement last year in the Taliban massacre of 134 children at an army-run school in Peshawar. Military statement also said the 6 civilians confessed to helping the gunman who attacked the school in December. Also said the death sentence were confirmed of the chief of army staff and the men had the right to a court of appeal hearing. Pakistan's Supreme Court recently ruled that the closed military courts are legal and can impose the death penalty on civilians. Chinese authorities are continuing an investigation into what caused 2 gigantic explosions at a warehouse in the main port city of Tianjin as locals express fear about the possible presence of hazardous chemicals near the site. VOA's Bill Hyde is in Tianjin.
One of the biggest concerns at the moment is the types of hazardous materials that were involved in the explosion and the possibility that these chemicals could be either polluting groundwater or in the air. That's a big concern here right now and on social media. Even as far away as Beijing, there are many who are concerned about what is in the air and whether that might have an impact to individuals' health.
VOA's Bill Ide, officials saying at least 50 people were killed, 700 others injured, 70 in serious condition. It's not known how many people are missing, and there is widespread expectation the death toll will continue to grow. China has slightly raised the value of its currency, ending 3 consecutive days of devaluation that had triggered concerns of an international currency war and raised fresh questions about the health of China's economy.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The IGAD group of countries has again warned South Sudan's warring parties to sign a peace deal by August 17th.
We have all IGAD countries here, and the message they have been passing across to the chief negotiators is one and the same. You cannot leave Addis Ababa this time without signing this agreement by the 17th of August.
Seyoum Mesfin is former Ethiopian prime minister and chief mediator for the IGAD Plus group of nations. At the same time, rebel leader Riek Machar says the talks have been hijacked by the Ugandan and South Sudanese presidents. And the World Health Organization says the Ebola outbreak in West Africa could end this year.
If the current intensity of case detection and contact tracing is sustained, the virus can be soundly defeated by the end of this year. That means going to zero and staying at zero.
Dr. Margaret Chan is head of the World Health Organization. Nigeria's president orders his military to defeat Boko Haram within the next 3 months. Businessman Benunai Yure will tell us why he wants to be president of Liberia. And a Nairobi record store serves as a link to East Africa's musical past. Those stories plus Marco Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Monday, August 17th, is the deadline for South Sudan's warring parties to sign a peace deal and end 20 months of bloodshed. But the two sides are still bickering over several points of disagreement and don't appear to be anywhere closer to striking a deal. Former Ethiopian foreign minister and chief mediator for the IGAD Plus group of nations, Seyoum Mesfin, is warning the warring parties that this time around, they will not be given extra time to iron out their differences.
We have all IGAD countries here. And the message they have been passing across to the chief negotiators is one and the same. You cannot leave Addis Ababa this time without signing this agreement by the 17th of August. Enough is enough. It is frustration and hopelessness that is reigning in South Sudan and all over the world. There is no any other chance.
Seyoum says the argument made by the warring parties that issues they are debating are so complex that they cannot be expected to hash out an agreement by Monday does not hold water. He says the contentious points have been the same since the negotiations began.
Let me tell you these complex issues as they have explained to us. They are saying one is the structure at the top of the government. And the second one is the power sharing. The third one is the security arrangement. The fourth one is federation. These are, they are saying to us, deal breakers. They know them right from the very beginning since January last year, not this year, last year. We have been circling the wagon all the last 20 months.
The Ethiopian diplomat says IGAD and the international community feels the pain of the people of South Sudan.
These people don't deserve what they are passing through. They have suffered so much so beyond their own share of prompt. I wish them an end to this crisis. I want to see South Sudan coming back to peace and prosperity.
Seyoum says President Salva Kiir is expected to arrive in Addis Ababa today, Friday, to join the talks. The South Sudanese president will be arriving a day later than mediators had hoped. But Seyoum says it's better late than never.
We're late, but not too late. If they are committed and they have the political will and courage, even few hours are enough because they know the issues.
Seyoum says it will be a pity if the two leaders squander the chance to end the war in South Sudan, where thousands have died and more than 2 million have fled their homes since the conflict erupted 20 months ago. This report was compiled by John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program, who is covering the talks in Addis Ababa. South Sudan's former vice president and rebel leader, Riek Machar, has expressed concern that proposals being discussed at the ongoing peace talks with President Salva Kiir's government have been hijacking the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In an interview with VOA, Machar blames Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and President Salva Kiir for changing the text of proposals previously agreed to by both parties before the current talks started. Machar says he was informed about the changes by Ethiopia's former foreign minister and chief IGA mediator, Seyoum Mesfin.
I was briefed by the chief envoy for the peace talks, that is Bill Martin. He briefed me about the meeting in Kampala. Apparently, the proposed peace agreement has been changed in Kampala in favor of Salva Kiir.
Does that mean that you and your group will sharply disagree with the new peace deal that was agreed in Kampala? Because I hear that there has to be some security arrangement, among other things, to be discussed once both of you begin another round of discussion. So what are your concerns about this?
You know, the proposed peace agreement carries a provision which says the national capital shall be demilitarized. The new proposal is not that. This has been dropped. And to us, this is a very critical issue. This is a deal breaker. So I think with the changes made in Kampala by President Museveni, I think there will be no peace agreement at all. And also the security arrangement would be left to the four chief of staff of the four countries, and that is Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Sudan. Our fate cannot be determined by other people. We should negotiate it ourselves. This is another deal breaker.
Does that mean that the deadline of 17 August is unlikely to be met by both groups, especially with your concerns about this arrangement that you say basically is a deal breaker?
You know, I'm very concerned that the IGAD mediation process or the IGAD plus mediation process has been hijacked in Kampala.
So have you presented or are you going to present your protests to the IGAD?
Definitely, I'm starting my protest with you. We will put our protest in writing. We have told the mediator, that is Ian Muffin, who mediates on behalf of the Ethiopian government, that it might be better off they call off the whole process because an embarrassment will take place, and we don't want to embarrass anybody. Now, we don't know which is the text. Is it the Kampala text? Is it the Addis Ababa text? And I believe the text they will present to us on the 15th is the Kampala text.
Riek Machar is former South Sudan vice president and now leader of the armed opposition. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from Addis Ababa. The head of the World Health Organization said Thursday that Ebola in West Africa could be soundly defeated by the end of this year. From the United Nations, viewers Margaret Bashir has more.
Dr. Margaret Chan told the UN Security Council that current surveillance and response capacities have greatly improved and health workers have a better picture of how the disease spreads. Speaking via a video link from Hong Kong, she said the three most affected West African countries have made huge progress. New cases in Liberia have stopped, and in Guinea and Sierra Leone, a total of only three cases have been reported during each of the past 2 weeks.
If the current intensity of case detection and contact tracing is sustained, the virus can be soundly defeated by the end of this year. That means going to zero and staying at zero.
The WHO says the latest outbreak of Ebola, which started last year, will not be officially over until there are zero cases of the virus. Affected countries need to have no new reported cases for 42 days before they can be declared virus-free. Dr. Chan said the African Union and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are jointly establishing a communicable disease control system to help African nations better prepare for potential future outbreaks. There have been nearly 28,000 cases of Ebola and more than 11,000 deaths. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 14th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The Nigerian military says it is implementing new measures against Boko Haram following an order by President Muhammadu Buhari to defeat the Islamist militant group within the next 3 months. The president issued the order Thursday while swearing in new senior military officers in Abuja. Critics have questioned Mr. Buhari's three-month directive, saying the same military has been battling Boko Haram for the last 5 years and has yet to completely defeat the militants. But Colonel Rabi Abubakar, acting director of Defense Information, tells reporter Peter Clotty that this time around, the military is ready to defeat Boko Haram.
This is a presidential directive, and Nigerian military has worked out all modalities it has been doing to ensure that Boko Haram is no more in this country. And I believe we can attain that time frame if the equipment, all which I know they're all available, you know. We are doing everything possible to ensure that we achieve that 3 months mandate.
The question then becomes, are you ready to carry out this new directive from President Buhari?
It's something that must be complied with. It's the presidential directives, and he's the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. And, you know, there have been collaborations with other stakeholders from other nations, Chad, Cameroon, even Niger. So with this effort, with these collaborations, with this bilateral agreement between these nations, Boko Haram will be crushed before that 3 months, or at worst, that 3 months.
Nigeria particularly has been battling this Boko Haram insurgent for at least 5 years now. There has been collaboration with other nations within a year or two now. How confident should Nigerians be that this time around things will be different?
In recent times, you will agree with me that Boko Haram's central command has been completely wiped out. These guys are in disarray. These guys are completely uncoordinated because they don't have central command. The center of gravity of Boko Haram has been completely crushed. So what remains? What remains is just to chase them and then finish the work, and we all have peace and stability in our nation. And that's definitely what we are doing.
What will the military tell those residents in areas where these militants often attack? What will you tell them?
Our soldiers are all over the place, one. Two, security, you know, it's everybody's responsibility. You understand? So the synergy is now between the military and the public. The public has a duty to, you know, give us timely information regarding the activities of these people, because these people are just women like any other person. They're not spirits. They are within us, and they're not there. We're not there. So if you see any sentences that are not being seen around to, within your location or localities, you are requested, or we expect that you should report immediately so that we take actions.
Colonel Rabi Abubakar is Nigeria's acting director of defense information for the military. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. In Liberia, a former associate of former President Charles Taylor has declared his candidacy for the country's 2017 presidential election. Businessman Benonai Yure, who served as head of the country's lucrative Bureau of Maritime Affairs during the Taylor presidency, says he wants to be president to improve the living condition of all Liberians. He refused to criticize President Ellen Johnson's Sirleaf government, which some say has not delivered what it promised the country more than 10 years ago. Rather, Yure said his presidency will unite Liberians while providing the basic essentials of life, including water, shelter, and electricity, as well as fight nepotism and corruption.
I'm certainly desirous of being president because I want to improve the living condition of my people. I want my people to be placed among nations that are developing. For too long, our people have been in darkness. It's about time that they move into an era of renaissance where they can see light, where they can experience some of the basic essentials that are necessary for life in the world today.
To say that you're running to improve the condition of the Liberian people implies that perhaps the current government is not doing enough to improve the lives of Liberians.
Well, look, James, to be honest with you, we're looking forward. Okay, we're not going to spend our time criticizing this government or any other government of the past. Yes, there have been problems in this government. It's normal for any government. We're not saying that this government has been perfect, you know, but we believe that the Liberian people deserve more, and we are prepared, you know, to give them more than they have been giving over the last 10 years. And we are depending on not only the Nigerians, but for the likes of James Boti and all journalists of the world to help us uniting our people and moving our country forward.
Now, you are a businessman, Mr. Yure. You are a businessman, and some people would say you have no experience to run a government. What do you say to that?
Well, look, that's comical to me. Of all the people that will be running for the presidency, I have more political experience than them. I have more education than them. And I have more experience, business experience, and leadership experience and all of that. I challenge anybody to bring me one that I don't surpass him.
Some may argue that you were very close to former President Charles Taylor, that it could be a factor for you.
Well, James, it hasn't been a factor for this government, considering the fact that our present president was a colleague of Mr. Taylor. More than 30% of her cabinet were ministers under Taylor. I don't understand why would it be a problem for me. But, James, I want you to be aware of one thing. I did not work for Charles Taylor. I worked for the government of Liberia. Charles Taylor government was a legitimately elected government, and I worked for the government of Liberia. Yes, it was under the leadership of President Taylor, and I have no regrets for that. But notwithstanding, that should never be an issue. And, James, it's about time we leave this Taylor thing. Put it behind us. Fate has it, Taylor is in Great Britain, serving almost a life sentence. Why would we continue to tie people who are capable of moving our country forward to Taylor?
Mr. Yure, would you be willing to partner with another political party or other political parties in the effort to find a leader?
Certainly, James. Look, you know, as I told you, no one group of people owns Liberia. Liberia is owned by every tribe in this country, every religion in this country. I, Daniel Ayuri, want you to join me in this movement to move our country forward. We have been talking to every political party.
Benon Ayure is leader of the recently certified All Liberian Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. A dusty music store in downtown Nairobi was once the hotspot for East African musicians recording music with influences from across the region. While the shop suffered with the introduction of CDs and MP3s, viewers gave Jaslo reports a renewed interest in vinyl records is bringing the music back.
Okay, this is a Luo band.
This is Abdul Karim, owner of the Melodica Music Store in downtown Nairobi.
Sorry about that. Forgot my glasses. Age creeps up.
We're in the back of his shop with a pile of old 45 RPM records.
This is a band called Olonde Family Band. There you go. There's the influence of family and whatever. And the song is called Musa Omondi. This is probably the name of some politician. It's actually in our Melodica label, so it really looks good when it's spinning.
Founded by his father in 1971, Melodica recorded tons of musicians from Kenya, Tanzania, and Congo during its heyday. The recordings left over reveal a melting pot of different musical traditions.
Some of these guys, like I said, they just learn off how to play a guitar basically on their own without any education and that. And then they just come up with their own kind of beats and then say, all right, we're going to go and, you know, sell a goat and head off into Nairobi and go find a recording music store. And bam, they would be at the door entrance, you know, playing their guitars, trying to impress. It's really amazing.
Throughout the 70s and 80s, Karim says the store was packed with musicians as people crowded the sidewalks outside, listening to the music being pumped out on the streets. Then came the 1990s. As cassettes and CDs replaced records, the last vinyl pressing plant in Nairobi closed down. And as families sold off or threw out their record players, music recorded at Melodica and other stores was locked away on vinyl discs. But the vinyl dry season may be coming to an end. In stall number 570 at Nairobi's Kenyatta Market, amidst the smoky haze of roasted meat, James Rugami has been selling records since 1989. Customers flit in and out as a Congolese record spins on the turntable.
8 years ago, there were people who thought I was crazy. They could come up and have a look and say, what are we keeping this for? But today they are coming back and appreciating. I'm so happy because even very, very young people.
Rugami is seeing a vinyl renaissance in Kenya. He says his sales have been up by 40% over the past 2 years. Both Rugami and Kareem say they are making contact with people all over the world who are looking for African records. Facebook groups have formed in Kenya, and enthusiasts have started holding monthly listening parties. Kareem has even started ordering new turntables from China to help satisfy the growing demand. And slowly but surely, the old sounds of East Africa are rising from the past. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak African Sports News, we begin with handball. Tunisia prevailed over Argentina 35-29 to register their first victory in four matches at the Men's Youth Handball World Championships in Yekaterinburg, Russia, on Thursday. Today, Friday, Tunisia played Japan and Egypt faced Germany in matches the Africans need to win to advance to the knockout stage of the contest. Algeria, who have lost all their matches and therefore have no prospects of progressing beyond the preliminary round, play Croatia in their final group fixture. Turning to netball, Jamaica dismissed Uganda 59-47 at the Netball World Cup in Sydney, Australia on Thursday. Today, Friday, Malawi encounter Jamaica, Zambia play Singapore, South Africa face England, and Uganda challenge world champions New Zealand. Meanwhile, the week-long Brookside Federation of East Africa Secondary School Sports Association Games starts in Huye, some 130 kilometers south of the Rwanda capital Kigali, tomorrow Saturday. Over 600 boys and girls from Burundi, Kenya, South Sudan, Tanzania, defending champions Uganda, and hosts Rwanda are vying for glory in athletics, badminton, basketball, football, handball, hockey, lawn tennis, netball, rugby, swimming, table tennis, and volleyball. In football, hosts Tunisia play Morocco in an Orange Africa Nations Championship qualifier in Tunis today, Friday. Elsewhere, Morocco welcome Ghana in a beach football friendly in El Jadida tomorrow, Saturday. On Sunday, Morocco play Hungary at the same venue. Finally, in boxing, the Africa Confederation Boxing Championship starts in Casablanca, Morocco on Sunday. It's a qualifier for the AIBA World Championships in Doha, Qatar in October, where boxers are vying to qualify for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigeria's president has ordered the military to defeat Boko Haram insurgency within 3 months. President Muhammadu Buhari spoke in Abuja on Thursday as he swore in four new military chiefs. The president replaced the heads of the Army, Navy, Air Force, and his chief of defense staff soon after taking office on May 29th in an effort to re-energize the fight against Boko Haram. The militants have killed nearly 1,000 Nigerians in raids and suicide attacks since Mr. Buhari was inaugurated. And the president of Guinea-Bissau, Jose Mario Vaz, has dismissed his government as a result of a rift with Prime Minister Domingo Simão Pereira. State radio and television stations made the announcement late Wednesday. That's it for this Friday, August 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Hello, sports fans. This is the voice of America's Sonny Young. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for the Sunny Side of Sports. On Fridays, you can also hear my expanded 30-minute edition of the show at 17:30 UTC, right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America.
What's up? I'm Jackson Funganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Cape Town.
You know, it's Upfront News Show.
Blazing up the place.
Upfront looks at issues that affect you. Interesting news and, of course, music, entertainment, celebrities, you name it, we'll talk about it. So don't forget to check us out every Wednesday at 1730 UTC on The Voice of America.